views and opinions expressed by hosts, invited speakers, and callers do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of the Black Talk Media Project or the Black Talk Radio Network.
So that means it's Women United Wednesday. We are talking all things women and men, because women and men go together. It's so filler. So Women United Wednesday, and I'm gonna have some great clips we'll share tonight. Also, one of my old time and all time favorites, Dr. Jewel Cook. He speaks on a metaphysical tip, I guess you could say. He's a medical doctor, and what I found most interesting about Dr. Jewel Cookroom is she contends that African bodies, our system is different from white people's or Asian people's or anybody else's. She says our systems are quite different, and those she certainly try to tell us our depression is this, or we this or that, our weight is this or that. We're actually, the cholesterol is reading this and that. It's just a difference in our body system. So that's a pretty interesting concept. But before we get into all of that and the attack on Black, loving Black people, loving the culture of Black people, behaving Black people. Let's bring Brother Brown. Is that your Brother Brown?
Yes, ma'am. I'm out. How you doing, sister?
I'm doing very well, thank you. You want to open us up with some libation? And we'll get started. All right, wonderful.
Right. Well, I'm going to explain libation to those that may not understand it. Libation is an African ritual. We were separated from our women's transatlantic slave trade. And it was replaced with westernized religious concepts. So, to be an African, I feel it's necessary to utilize the skills and hope, which means to return to your roots from which you have come. So, in doing that, I'm going to do libation tonight to those who have passed on and have paved the way for us lost. Still here on this side of the Tennessee to carry on the Yoruba, which means Tennessee to our African people. And now, that's the mission of our ancestors to speak this scene, Ashe.
Ashe.
And I now just ask to thank the ancestors of the past before me, who struggled on this side of eternity to minds, will, and emotions, and spirits of our people who have been changed for so many years. Ashe.
Okay.
And I think the ancestors are about to chime in the clock. Ashe.
Ashe.
Marks from God from Zagabe. But she watched him. So John. Very Macri Abbotum. Dr. Kalashi Wilson. Kutu Newton. Dr. John Henry Clark, Dr. Joseph Yakimin, and not only those who are prominent, but my grandma, my grandfather, David Austin Brown Sr., my father, George Howard, my mother, Mary, great
grandmother. My grandmother, Beulah.
Right. And the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, Brother Malcolm X, Teddy Shabazz, and all those who have gone before us to pave the way to make sure that we understand what it is to be African, what it is to understand our own culture, what it is to embrace our culture, and what it is to understand the necessity of African unity. Okay?
Ashe.
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 And Ashe.
And I say, oh, thank you, Brother Brown. And you know what? I want to, since this is Women's Wednesday and we like to highlight women and promote all things beautiful and wonderful about women, you did say Betty Shabazz. I don't know if you said Coretta. What's that, Coretta?
Coretta
Starking. Let's see. All the Candaces and Nala Santoba and all of our warrior queens
Houston.
And princesses and Whitney Houston and little Bobby. Yes. Thank you, Brother Brown.
Yeah, Whitney Houston and Brother Bobby. Yeah, because these were people whose lives were sacrificed. Inhumane manner. You know, I mean, when I looked at the Inquirer magazine, my daddy didn't stand in that grocery store. Just brought sadness to my heart seeing them take pictures of that child. She's nothing but a child who lost her mother at an early age and who had no direction. I mean, just looking at that child in their home all those days and weeks. You know, it just broke my spirit down so much that somebody, some diabolical ass Anglo-Saxon would do this not just to the mother, but to the child also. You know, these people are damn wicked. They're just wicked. You know, I look how they worked Michael Jackson to he was just like bones and flesh, how they even ostracized him from the country, you know, for so many miles, they had to live overseas because they dehumanized him, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then when he died, his record still jumped 100%, 300%. You know, all of these elements that have been used to destroy us as a people, we need to seriously take a look at. You know, I we talk about black women. I look how Sojourner Truth, from her time in the abolitionist movement, she had to make them understand. They looked at her as not being a woman because of her features. And I think she wrote a poem that I am a woman.
And I won.
And I won, right. So she was saying to this element of white supremacy, don't look about how I look. Look at what God has created me to be. And that should send a message to our so-called young black women. I've been who have joined this white supremacist promulgated LGBT prayer.
Oh my goodness.
You know, because here was a woman who had children in slavery, who did not have the so-called physical features of a beauty queen in the eyesight of white supremacy, is what she let them know. Ain't I a woman too? Because they had degraded her as a slave. They had tried to ostracize her from speaking, you know? And these are some of the things that these young people are up there. That we are, our young people who have taken on that spirit need to understand what they were created to be. And I tell them all the time, I say, you know, the Creator, which some of us call God, the Creator never makes mistakes. He never made a mistake in placing black women, who are the most beautiful women on this planet in my eyesight, placing them on a pedestal because they were the first one. And you know, we need to understand that we are a spirit people, and we are either attracted to or attacked by spirits. We live in a spirit world, whether we want to acknowledge it or not. We don't live in a religious world. We live in a spiritual world. You know, and we
have
to understand.
We have a call.
Okay, that's fine. Let's take it. Here, let's take it.
Okay. All right. Let's see. Caller, we're coming to you. Caller, 404-226. What's the man?
Black.
Is this Sarah?
Yes, ladies. Oh, yes, Brother Brown. And this is Black Rose. This is Sarah calling in.
Sarah.
Yeah, greetings to you all once and all. Yes, and giving honor and praise to the ancestors and to the elder. I was first asked permission to speak. May I speak, Brother Brown?
Yes, you may, my sister.
Thank you, Brother Brown. And since you are giving greetings to the ancestors, I'm going to put my mother up there first and foremost, my ancestor mother, as well as my grandparents, even all my my grandparents on the female side, as well as me to give praises and honor to the side of Bilal Barnett, sister. Lord, I draw a brain freeze already that quickly. I'm getting my senile moment this quick.
Run the program for us. Here it is, Black people can't even take part in their own liberation. But they're going to dehumanize us, and they always want to say, yeah, we help. But yet, you can't have a hand in your own thing. Here it is, a Black woman, and these white, so-called white women, Susan B. Anthony, and all of them, they still didn't look at her as being a woman, because even with everything that we have done, they're still wanting her envious because Black men were given the right to vote with the 15th Amendment. And white women have always, you know, they've always been envious and jealous against it until they finally got their amendment in order to give them the right to vote. So that is why I've always said, I'm not a feminist. I'm not a woman. I'm not a part of any women's movement because I don't have a problem with my man. I don't have a problem with Black men. We have a problem with disrespect in the Black community between the male and the female gender. But as far as all this equality nonsense, I don't have a problem with Black men because we have always, from all our brain, it's always been the male and the female. We are the original Trinity. The man, right. Woman, and the child. We've always had unity in our family. And yes, sir, until the European came in and disrupted that unity that we have. We never had a problem with it. Like what women and men always had, you know, we trying to get popped off. We had that stuff. That's why I never get a part of that.
See, we have to understand that this feminist movement that was really orchestrated a long time ago, but was undercover. See, it began with women's suffrage and women, the temperance movement, way back when they was trying to use the religious system to say that women were equal to men. This was the way it was. And you know what they try to do, and I think out of the same mindset came Margaret Sanger, the forerunner of Planned Parenthood. So these elements of degradation to destroy the Black man and woman and the child unit, the unification of that Holy Trinity. See, they replaced it with their own Trinity. The place of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, which does not even exist.
Exactly.
And you know, I'm going to touch on something tonight about the aspects, the difference between religion and spirituality. Because are the most misconceived people on this planet when it comes to understanding that religion is not spiritual. Religion is man-made, regardless of whether it's an Eastern religion, an Arabic religion. It was never put there for our progress. Religion was a political tool that was used to control the mind of the people from day one.
That is the only purpose
that they have is to politically control the minds of the people so you know what direction the people are going to go in. That is the only purpose of religion. Spirituality, on the other hand, is when you connect with something that is spiritual. And that's who we are as a people. I had a small debate the other day with a gentleman. He said, well, why do I have to believe in God? Your ancestors are not God. Okay, these are people who you have a spiritual connection with. If you have some of my bloodline relatives, but these are people that spiritually never died. See, that issue of death did not rest in the African community. We didn't believe in death. We believe in passing on from this side of eternity until eternity. You know, this side is a limit. This side of eternity is limited. But when your time is up, for whatever reason, and you pass on into eternity, you are the spiritual essence of what has become your people. And normally, they regenerate their spirits through your children, your grandchildren, and your great-grandchildren. That means that if we understood this and stopped going to church and going to mosques and going to school, and going to all these other things that did not come out of goddamn Africa, we would be a stronger people.
Exactly, Officer Brown, because if you look at the Indians, you know, the Hindus, they believe in reincarnation. They believe that they're always coming back, which they in essence they have some of more so of the spiritual essence of our spirituality, because something that Baba James Smalls has said and has stuck with me, because I met him when he came up here to Dallas and he did a presentation a few months ago. And one of the things that he's always said to me, what he said in that presentation was that the spirituality that me, I personally, my parents had 10 children, and each of us are the embodiment of our parents. We are the embodiment, we are the most, the newest version of the ancestors. I am my mother and my father, my grandparents, and all the way going all the way back to the beginning. That is me. That's all of that is embodied is in me. And I pass that on to my children. So my children are a more refined version of me, their grandparents, and all that came before them. So that is the thing that we have. That's one thing that with voodoo and, you know, and Malkovi and all these other religions that came out of West Africa that we brought over here with us, and we tried to assemble as enslaved people, and we tried to carry on, is the veneration and the continuation of the ancestors. They call them, you know, Lucas call them animists. That's what they call it, because you are venerating your ancestors. But we have to know that their eternity goes all the way back.
That's right. And see, when they said, when they came up with this terminology for Bogan, it was because they did not understand. Then they came up with this concept of, you know, the Hollywood media.
Mm-hmm.
The Hollywood media is what virtually tried to paint the most negative perspective of our spirituality because they couldn't understand it. See, anything that the European cannot understand,
They demonize.
That's right. They demonize. All right. They use Hollywood to portray it as negativity. When you look at the Ten Commandments, that Charleston Heston played them, okay, all of the Egyptians or the Semitic people, they never mention the name of Kemet. Mm-hmm. They never mention the name of Kemet. You hear these Christians sing songs about and preach these sermons on Pharaoh let my people go. But guess what? Pharaoh never held your people in bondage. And I told him about it one day. She told me, and I haven't got a tense Bible up, but maybe you can try to find out whether the Egyptian, whether the Hebrew slaves, or the so-called Hebrew slaves, built the pyramids. And I told him, I said, where did you get your information from? Well, I got my information out of the Bible. I said, proof.
They can't prove it, Brother Brown.
I already know that, but I told him, I said, find me one scripture, and I laid $100 bill on the table. I said, you find me one scripture in your Bible, your King James Bible, that says the Hebrew slaves built the pyramids. And I said, he had $100 bill. And he went all through his house, he got on the internet, he did everything he did. And I ended up walking out the door with my $100 bill, and I said, oh, this is the
because he said, don't learn nothing. Because you put up your $100 with mine.
And see, the thing about it is that when you, and I'm speaking from the aspect of being an ex-minister. Years ago when I came out for help, when I went into the church, and now I know that my ancestors allowed me to be taught the inner workings of Christianity so I could come back and teach my people the truth. See, sometimes you have to go through a transformation of understanding and learning that life is, this journey that we call life is meant to learn something. If you don't learn nothing on this journey, then your life is worthless. Everybody in this life, on this side of eternity, has to have a journey. But in that journey, and during the time on this planet, in the physical form, you must learn something. And the most important thing for you to learn and the descendants of African people is how to be African. Don't tell me about your address, your dashiki, and your laundry room. That Africans can understand the necessity of knowing, and I said it earlier, using Sankofa, which means the country from which you have come. See, our roots are in Africa. Our roots are not in England. I heard some blacks say, well, I'm part Irish, you're not part Irish, you're part of the diversity. That's all you got to do. You were born a Negro. And like I told you, Negroes only exist within the confines of the United States. If you go abroad right now, sir, you know what I'm talking about. And people look at you in the way you carry yourself, the first thing they say, where are you from? If you tell me you're from the United States, then you are a Negro. If you tell me you're from, I didn't know that until I went overseas years ago. And I witnessed this with my own eyes. As soon as you said, I'm from the United States, or you're a Negro, if you said, I'm from Jamaica, then you're a Jamaican. If you said, well, I'm from Haiti, then you're a Haitian. But if you say you're from the United States, you are an American Negro. Negro not only made in America.
Hey, Brother Brown.
Yes, ma'am.
Brown. Let's welcome in Aja. I think Aja has a comment.
Hi. Namaste, everyone. Namaste,
greetings
to you too, Aja.
Excuse me, Asha, I don't mean to interrupt, but I'm getting messages from listeners. I don't know why this happens. It's only been happening on the last few programs with the Lotus Place, but the audio keeps breaking up. It sounds mechanical, so I need to hang up and dial back in. It clears up sometimes, but then it comes back. So I need to hang up and call back in and see if that will clear it up, because the listeners are telling me, you know, this is going on, so I need to try to straighten that out. Is that cool with everybody?
Okay.
Everybody
needs to just call back in, Scotty.
If it hangs up on you, it should not hang up on you when I hang up. But if it does, call back in. But I'm going to play some music for those that's listening to the live stream, and then take care of what I need to take care of to see if I can resolve that issue for you listeners. All right. We'll be back on the other side. Stay with us. Thank you.
access code accepted. This conference is being recorded. Q&A session started.
Let's see if we clear it up. Sounds clear on my end.
It sounds so good so far. It sounds good. Now, I just called back here. And that could be because, okay, you know, on Wednesday nights and Sunday nights, I'm doing like probably 6 to 8 hours of broadcasting, and y'all the last program to come on, and I didn't have a chance to hang up and dial back in, and that was probably just Skype acting crazy. So I apologize, but everyone sounds fine so far.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, my brother.
Fantastic. Thanks, Scotty. All right.
Okay. I have two comments on recent topics. One, on religion and spirituality. I saw this quote, and I think it will make it kind of clear in bullet form. Religion is the belief in someone else's experience, and spirituality is the belief in your own experience. And spirituality involves you more of knowing who you are rather than going through somebody else's life. That's my first comment. My second comment is regarding the miseducation and the just outright withholding of certain information from our African people was to keep the African people from knowing, one, who they really are and the powers that they possess. And once they become connected, they will figure this out, mainly through family. So you got to destroy the family and then just destroy the whole group. So back when our people were legally enslaved, if someone was enlightened, so to speak, and knew that, hey, this isn't the way it's supposed to be, you know, I know you were born into this, but this isn't right, then they would separate that person, you know, or educated or knew how to read, they would separate that person. So it's all about separation, because we have so many powers that we just aren't aware of, because we haven't gotten into ourselves. We haven't become truly spiritual, like we're saying. So, but I think we're getting there. I think a lot more and more people are becoming more aware of what's going on, as to start with self. Start with self.
So look into yourself. Look into
yourself. Yeah. Love yourself first. Yeah, get to know who you are. Love yourself first. You will love other people who look like you. And you won't hate them.
That's right. And see, because a lot of times the spirit of self-hatred, you know,
it's
embedded. You know, I talked to a lady that was having issues with her daughter. She has three beautiful daughters. And, you know, one of them is supposed to be bipolar schizophrenic, which I attribute to post-slavery traumatization. And the other two are perfectly okay. But the one that's the oldest, 17, nice, beautiful young sister, she said, I hate myself.
Mm.
Why does she hate herself?
And, you know, when I looked at her, I said, well, why does she hate herself? Her mother just broke down and said, Mr. Brown, I have no idea why she always said that. You know, if she wasn't here on this planet, it would be better for her two sisters. And, you know, we have to understand, like we said earlier, about the spirituality of our people. See, something is making, because of the norms that have been set by white supremacy, which they call society, something is making our children hate themselves.
Brother Brown, let's pick that up on the other side of the break. We'll take a quick break and come right back, because that's a very good topic. You know, I always like to talk about that, this psychological trauma that you have to experience. Okay.
You are tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
and we are back. If you would like to share a comment or have a question, just press star 6 and 1. The phone number is 641-715-3660. The participant code 549032 pound, and then star 6 and 1 to share your comment. All right, Brother Brown, and then we have another caller when you're ready.
Okay, and I just want to say that when this degree of hopelessness hits our children, and I see it all the time, you know, they don't look at themselves as being able to survive. You know, a lot of them come from broken homes, which I came from myself. But the thing about it is that there's not a spirit of survival. So if you have a hopeless, and I always relate that to a picture that I saw years ago, and was right at the end of the end of slavery. It's a picture that I'm trying to get a copy of that picture where all these people were let loose, and they were sitting in front of this log cabin, the little children, the, you know, middle-aged children, and they had nothing. They had absolutely nothing. If that doesn't bring on depression, then nothing would. Here we are, let loose from the slave master. We're supposed to be free. But what do we have to accomplish our freedom? We had no education. We had no money. We had no viable means of economic support. And we are in a religious system that is controlled by white supremacy and racism. We had nothing. And here we are today in 2015, and we have the same degree of disparity and depression among our young people. So we have to reinvent the wheel when it comes to the psychoanalytical concepts of why our children hate themselves. See, I could see it if you were, you know, and you had, and some of them have physical features that people don't feel that they deem that it's viable, like some kids might be like Sister Shiva said. We come from a different breed of people. You know, all of us are not, I'm not going to look the same. All of our hair is not the same texture. All of our skin color is not the same. But there's something that we can unify ourselves among, and that is because we are all descendants of the first people that walked on this planet. It must be taught to their children that they are beautiful. We have to teach it to them at early ages. See, I hear parents say, you ugly, or you this. You know, don't degrade your children.
I hear that.
Uplift your children.
It breaks my heart to hear parents say that to their children.
Yeah, I mean...
With your black ass.
Mm-hmm.
But if I may say something to what you, Black Rose and Brother Brown, what you were saying about the self-hatred, we need to go back and look, before we say why you shouldn't yourself hate themselves, this phenomena only recently came about within the past 6 years when we turned over our children to Europeans to be educated.
That's
when
right.
You have your children from younger ages, from the ages of 2, because a lot of us are putting our children into daycare on the job while we are working. And the people that they are looking at don't look anything like them. Their hair texture, skin color is nothing like them. So you starting them off from that age and all the way through where their primary caregivers are European women. So what do you expect European women to tell these children when they have these long flowing hair and they're tossing their hair about and doing all these, like, white women like people like to be flipping their hair all over the place. And these black children, they're looking at them, their hair is tight and coiled on their head and they can't flip it and they can't do all of these different things to it. So, and then they have these mixed children, you know, these so-called mixed breed children who are coming along and they're put up there and they're told that they're so pretty and they're so attractive and fussed over.
Yes.
So that's where the self-hate is going to start developing, because it's starting off in these pre-K schools where all of these mixed children, they're fussed over, they're told how pretty they are, their hair is so nice,
their
skin and their eyes, all of
their hair.
Children are ignored.
Yeah. Everybody wants to play with their hair.
Exactly. But not the black children. They're ignored and they're told. So they, believe me, children are very, very astute. The smallest child out here are very astute, and you might think that they are forgetting things and they're not observing what's being done, but they are seeing how you are reacting to them versus this child who's mixed, like black and Latino, black and white, or whatever, black and Asian, and how they are being fussed on and how they are being ignored. So that self-hatred is going to grow with them, because in our community, a lot of these people of these mixed unions, they always come up into the black community, and we tend to fuss over these people and make much of a big deal over them than we do with our own black children.
One guy was talking about a friend of his who had children by an African woman and then later met a European woman and had children with her. And he was saying that he was just so ashamed of his friend because he totally ignored the children with the African woman and just doted on the children with the European woman. So, you know, sending messages like that, like you said, Sarah, you know, they notice that. They feel that no matter how young, you know, when you judge a child by their, yes, they can feel it. They can feel it.
Exactly. These children are not foolish, because I know from my nieces and nephews, that is why I always spend a lot of time with my nieces and nephews, because they are darker youth, and I always let them know that they are pretty, they are attractive, you know. I don't care what anybody tell y'all. Y'all are beautiful children, and I fuss over them. Because I know that the darker you children, they're the ones that are most ignored in the school. They don't get called when it's time for them to play, to pick a partner or whatever to do things with. They're always the ones stuck out there, and they're the last. Reluctantly, the teacher has to assign someone to them in order for you to pair up. And all of these things over the year, it builds up this resentment. And that's why a lot of times these children, they resent. And these are the children who normally, they end up marrying outside the group, or they end up becoming same-sex or same-gender-loving people, end up lesbians or gays or whatever. And
They've lost their self-identity. They don't love themselves. You know, they feel that something is wrong with them.
Yeah. Because we tell them all the time. Right. Oh, Brother Brown, please go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, no. Actually, a lot of it has to do with dysfunctional males in the household where there's little girls at. You know, there's a situation where, you know, daddy wanted a little boy, but he had all girls.
Right.
So that's what. Some fathers try to make their daughters athletes, you know, take them fishing and hunting and all that kind of stuff. That is not the role model for a girl.
Right.
Remember those days. Hey, Brother Brown, let's take this other call. Caller from, let's see, 619.
Hey, what's going on?
Hey, how are you? Welcome in.
I'm doing well. I wanted to jump in on this self-hate topic and some of the things that were just said. I have trouble seeing how it could have been in the past 50 years. This issue pops up when we go to the clock. That was done in 1939. And you had children still choosing the doll, doing the doll tests, and still failing. Thinking that white was better and white was prettier. I mean, that's very old. And I mean, my racial thing wasn't even that big. Getting to be now. So I don't know if we can really attribute that to those things. Self-hate and things of that nature.
Your call is a little distorted. I'm unable to hear every sentence he's saying. Brother Brown, can you hear him well? Can you hear the caller?
I can't hear him. It's breaking up.
I couldn't hear him either.
It sounds like... Yes.
Hello?
Yes, we can hear you now. Could you repeat your question?
Okay, hold up. No, I had a statement. Because I was saying, how could we... attribute these things to, if we could say these only came up in the last 50 years,
when we go to the Clark experiment, dealing with the doll test and things of that nature, I think that was done in 1939, if I'm not mistaken, and replicated for the Brown versus Board of Education, Supreme decision and that whole deal. I think it was, redone in the 50s and it had the same result. So how could we say it's a result of,
That's incorrect. That is incorrect. That dog test was done in the 1940s.
Right. Yeah, that's 1939, right? 1939.
No, it was not done in 1939. It was done in the mid-1940s. And that test was done on the
basis of the
circumstance. No, that dog test, that original dog test that was done with Dr. Clark and his wife, it was done in Boston, Massachusetts in the Northeast. That's where that dog test was done. It wasn't done in the South, the original test. So if you want to take some black children that living in the North with whites and and assimilated with whites, where even though they have assimilated with them, they've still been left to feel self-hating about themselves, you're going to get that same result as what happened when he went into the South and he did that test. Because even when he went and he did that test again, that test was flawed again, because if you were to go back and read this, that test result that Dr. Clark did in the 1950s for the Brown v. Board of Education, that test result came out that the children preferred to be in a school and they did much better in the all-black setting. But that result that was in Thurgood Marshall turned that result, tweaked that result, and submitted it to say that black children would do better in an integrated setting with whites. They feel more self-esteem in a white setting. And that was turned around, and that was a false statement. That was
so they weren't choosing, and I'm asking more than I'm debating. So they weren't choosing the white dolls. The children weren't choosing the white dolls as in the original experiment.
But you have got to find out if you are doing an experiment on a controlled setting and you want a desired result as the Clarks were doing, then you're going to get the results that you were paid to do, because they were paid to put out their results to say that black children were self-hating and they want to be around whites. And that is the results that it produces. The same as when you are calling in and you are doing a survey and they want to get a certain point. That test is already controlled. And the subject and the results is already controlled for the results that they want. Because they're not going to leave margins for error.
Okay, now I know I don't want to take a lot of time. I had one more thing. The first female millionaire, I believe, was Madam C.J. Walker. And she got to $1 million basically by helping black women take their nappy, kinky, coily hair and make it straight. I mean, you don't think that's some self-hate way back then, the same kind of
no.
thing? Okay.
No. Madam C.J. Walker didn't... Madam C.J. Walker didn't make her money trying to straighten black people here. Madam C.J. Walker's money was made in producing a product for black women to nurture their scalp. It was a grease. It was not the Preston comb. You see, a lot of people put out this false information saying that Madam C.J. Walker made her money off of Preston comb. No, she did not. Her money was made in producing a hair tonic, grease, shampoos, and things like that for black people to grow their hair.
Exactly. I'm so glad you said that because they never tell you about that. They never promote that. It was a lot more. She was doing a lot more than that hair comb thing. She was already making money. She was doing the products.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
She,
no,
she
I appreciate.
Runner,
I appreciate.
Dudley.
No, I appreciate.
The moment,
because see, another thing that people don't understand about Madam C.J. Walker with her products. She paved the way for the first black beauty school. Before there was white beauty school, there were black beauty school that were paved the way, because my grandmother was a beautician. And in Norfolk, Virginia, there was a lady named Dorothy Russell who was taught by Madam C.J. Walker. She came back to Norfolk, Virginia, and she started a beauty school that lasted up until she died. And she, you know, she was a beautician. So the promulgation of us as a people beautifying ourselves with our own products was long before Revlon or Maybelline or any of those things, because she was never credited for what she did when it came to beautifying the black woman. She was promulgated by saying that the black woman wanted to be like the white woman.
Right. Well, and no, I appreciate that. She kind of became a red herring for the point I was trying to make. The point I was making was that way back then, a lot of us were going away from the natural hair into the straightening and the things of that nature.
No.
Really,
no,
aside
was,
from. Okay, and if that's not true, then fine. I don't know. I haven't done deep study. Is that you're saying that didn't happen?
No, it's not, because they did not straighten their hair. You see, back in those days, what a lot of black women were doing, we were tying up our hair in rags, because there was no emphasis placed on the care of our hair. You would get some fat back, some grease or whatever that you left over that you cooked with, or you would slap it on your head and put a rag around your head and then go about it, because the grease was basically used as a repellent to keep bugs from off your scalp. That's what they were using those grease for. But well, Madam C.
So when do we... When did we start straightening our hair?
That all came about in the, I would say in the late 20s, in the early 40s, when the invention of the lye and all of that, because that was mostly done by men. Because if you look at Cap Calloway and all of that with the Heidi Idaho, with his slick back hair, he was using that process on his hair. A lot of men started that processing on their hair. So don't try and slap it on black women, because even Malcolm X, he was using that process on his hair.
The pressing curl.
The hot comb. You know, a lot of people use that with a hot plate and a hot comb to pass the warm comb through your hair, because it helps to detangle your hair. Because I know as a child growing up, I used to get a hot press because my hair is very, very thick. And I'm very, very tender headed. So to prevent my hair from screaming and hollering, My mother and my sisters would just get a hot comb after we get our hair washed on Saturday. I would just pass the warm comb through our hair to loosen up the tangles, and then you could braid it and do whatever you need to do to manipulate the hair more. But it was never meant to straight, because I never had straight hair. That was something never happened.
Okay. All right. Well, you know, I just wanted to ask a few questions, just because a lot of times I feel like we frame problems as something new. Like, we, you know, people will bring up the Crips and Bloods and say, see, this is why we divided, we got all of this and all this trip, blah blah blah. But then I read African history and I see before they even came and got us, we already had tribal issues, and that was the whole reason we got taken this way. So it's not like it's
that was not the reason.
Go ahead.
We did not get taken because we had tribal issues.
No.
We got taken as slaves because we trusted these white people.
The Europeans.
We trusted these people. We did not live in disharmony.
Exactly.
We invited them in, like we did with the Arabs before the Europeans. We brought in Arabs. Anytime you bring in strangers into your house and they have a hidden agenda, look for them to create confusion and disharmony. And that is what happened. It starts hitting wife against husband, family against them, created this animosity that spread outward.
Read the book called Destruction of Black Civilization.
I'm glad you brought that book up, because that was the main book that made me reach that conclusion.
Then go and read Introduction to African Civilization by John D. Jackson.
Yeah, that's on my list. Okay, but I wanted to move back to this point real quick. So the understanding I have of different tribes selling their prisoners of war and trading with the white man and selling slaves and pretty much cooperating in that, because they seen these other tribes as not their people, when white folks on the other hand were seeing each other as white. You guys don't think that was a large factor in the fact that the reason they were able to pretty much just pick us off and take so many of us?
That's a falsehood.
You don't think we're selling other tribes prisoners of war?
I'm just telling you it's not true.
Oh, okay.
Why is it that we as African people, mostly born here in this country, we, even when we do our study Even when we do our so-called fact check on history, we always come up with, well, we did sell, we did cooperate, we did sell all, but we never talk about the wars. We never focus on the many, many wars that we had, our ancestors had against the Europeans as they were fighting them. Where the hell is Shaka Zulu coming in at? Nobody mentions him.
He never fought the white man. He didn't get a chance to. But, I mean,
yes,
you bring up Shaka Zulu.
Yes, he did. Shaka
Zulu. Yes, he did.
My brother was, I was my understanding that he died, and his he encountered the white man, but he never went to war. He was pretty much warring against other tribes. Pretty brutal to like, other black
people.
Shaka Zulu came against the British.
He fought the British and the Dutch.
Right.
He himself personally? Okay. All right. Well, like I said, I'm just here to learn.
Okay, well, that means that sometimes, brother, you have to listen to learn. Yeah.
Military tactics were stolen using the tactics that Shaka Zulu used, and nobody had ever seen anything like that before. This was a first, and they used a lot of his tactics. His military tactics, because he was superior in military tactics.
Right.
Exactly.
Right,
and yeah. I could tell you, somebody that retired from the military, the tactics that Shaka Zulu used as part of the Army War College. Those generals and all of those admirals and generals, because they all have to go to the War College, the Military War College, in order for them to receive, to move on up the ladder to get, like, field officers, or, well, not field officers, but flag officers. Flag officers are from colonels on up. And they all
right.
go to the War College, and those tactics are taught there. They are taught
exactly.
Shaka Zulu's tactics.
No, no.
Oh, exactly. Period.
Because he is, like, was it Shaka Zulu, or was it, oh, my goodness. I'm having a brain freeze. Like
it may be too,
yeah.
but I know it's Shaka Zulu.
Hannibal,
right?
Yeah.
That's thank you, Brother Brown. Was it Shaka Zulu or Hannibal that came out with the guerrilla tactics, and other soldiers
Shaka.
Had never seen? It was Shaka. Other
yeah,
soldiers had never really seen
that
tactic, type of guerrilla.
He would have some of his troops hide in over the hill. Then he would do diversionary tactics. He created the Asagai. I mean, I know he's definitely a military genius. I'm very aware of that.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
The point I was trying to make, and I mean, you guys brought up Shaka, was before, you know, and like I said, I'm not sure you might correct me on this, but my understanding was that before they, I think it was the British or some explorers came on the coastline, he had never seen a white person. But even before then, Shaka was pretty much known from all the tribes he was taking over, how brutal he was, how many people he was killing. You know, his tactics, he was very brutal.
Let me ask you a question. Where did you get your information from?
I read in the Destruction of Black Civilization, did a lot of speaking on Shaka Zulu. There was another, I listened to an expert from Henry Clark. Go ahead.
And your readings from Dr. Clark and Chancellor Williams, did it say that Shaka Zulu destroyed his own people?
No, it doesn't, but it does say he was a conqueror.
Okay, he never conquered his own people.
Right.
The tribe.
Let me
finish my statement. The tribal differences that they had, which were sometimes many in number, they always had a unification of spirit.
Mm-hmm.
They never, ever, you need to read some more Dr. John Henry Clark. You need to listen to some of his lectures on video, where he gives in-depth details into how this thing has been twisted to think that we helped enslave ourselves. That is a lie. I tell you right in some of his videos. He said, everybody that believes this, he said, it is a lie. And there are things that have been put out there to discredit our people's unification.
Mm-hmm.
We never enslaved ourselves.
Right.
We never, Let me finish, because I listen to you. I just want to listen to help you out. We never enslaved ourselves, number one. We had tribal differences where if one tribe not conquered, if one tribe won over another tribe, they were incorporated and became one. They didn't kill off another tribe. They were incorporated to strengthen the tribe. They were allowed to intermarry into the tribe. They were given land with the tribe. They married the daughters of the kings of that tribe. And they made the tribe stronger. There was a sort of unification. And anybody tell you anything else, they're telling you a lie. See, we have a distorted element that has been floating around the so-called conscious community that tried to make us as villains, as if we were on our own demise. That's not true.
Mm-hmm.
The worst thing that we did in Africa was allow that Arab to come and intermarry into our families.
Exactly.
That's the worst thing that we ever did, because when he came and he brought his religion to Africa, it was for total destruction of Africa. Because they had a custom in Africa that the children would always practice the religion or the spirituality of the father. That's how the Arab got to Africa. That's how they eventually took over ancient Kemet, which became Egypt. See, all of these things were intertwined in the destruction of Africa. Okay?
Right.
And if you don't get the facts right, then you will utilize these distortions as if they were true. And I'm done.
Okay. What I was going to add to what Brother Brown was saying to the brother is that in the Zulu tribe is made up of different, the Xhosa is the majority of the Zulu tribe. The Zulu is a small minority, but the Xhosa is the larger majority. What Shaka Zulu was doing, he was consolidating all of the tribe under one umbrella. And sometimes, as the saying goes, if you want, you cannot make omelets without cracking eggs. And you got a lot of people, because you can do more in as a group, as a large group, rather than as these small fractions, and you're trying to go out here and you're going to try and withstand the forces of the Europeans. And that is why the whole of South Africa, it has such a large group. The Zulus and the Xhosa are such a large concentration of them, because Shaka was the one that consolidated all of them into that one tribe. He put them all together.
And you mentioned earlier, I heard you mention something earlier pertaining to the Crips and the Blood.
Yes.
Okay. Now, how does that tie into anything? Because here are two factions that were started out of Tukey Williams. You know, and me and Tukey Williams, if he was living, we were the same age, 61 years old. We both started in the Black Panther Party at the age of 16 years old. And after the party was disbanded in the early 70s, following COINTELPRO, he took another challenge. He took another way out. He started out on the right path, but then it became corrupt. See, when you become, if you're living in that street life, as I have lived it, and money becomes your god and your goal, okay, then you're taken away from the true essence of what you started out doing. And that's how he got caught up. And what happened was, it became...
Hey, Brother Brown, let's finish telling his story when we come back from the break. Yep.
Okay.
We'll take a quick break. And then I think Mother Dunn has a hot topic for us.
And we'll be right back. You're listening to the Black Talk Radio Network. Stay tuned.
Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
Oh,
Okay, and we are back at the Lotus Place. Press star 6-1 if you have a question or a comment. Before we go to Mother Dunham with a hot topic, let's see. I say hot. Are you there? Mother Hattie, shall I say, while she's reading this statement against the attacks on women. Hey, Mother Hattie. How are you? You have a statement for us tonight? Mother Hattie. Okay, well, maybe Mother Hattie has herself on mute. Delta, let's see if Delta is alert.
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, Delta, how are you?
Fine, fine, fine. Well, I'm going to skip the hot topics. I'm going to jump right in. I have something
okay.
because I was on the line. And I was listening at what the young man was saying about Shaka Zulu. You know, like destroying, you know, they saying, you know, our people. A lot of this stuff is distorted. And it's distorted by the white man. The white man have always been the biggest deceiver and the biggest liar. And he was always, it was always, he was put to really divide the tribes. He went in there to divide. Every time they go somewhere, they go to divide the people. And they have a plan. And they plan is to always try to take what the tribes have and take it for themselves. They are the biggest thieves you ever want to see. They are the biggest thief. And they went over there. They are the biggest thieves, the biggest violence. They always have a plan because their plan was, now they went over there and they got the tribe. The tribes got along. And people may say, well, they, like Brother Brown said, they may have had some little squabbles and all that. But they didn't really get off in that until the white man come over there and started to put one against the other. And they
as
were.
Usual.
They plan was.
They're doing now. They're doing now.
Mm-hmm. And they plan was to divide them. And then once they get them divided, then they can do what they want to do. Because once, when they are unity, you can't do what you want to do. Because
exactly.
They will come together. They will come together. And that's what we got to realize as a race of people. And it's so hard. It's been embedded in the black man. It's been embedded in us that what they have done to us to divide us. And we gotta come together and figure out a way to get that out of our head, because the white man always got a strategy, and his strategy is to keep us divided against each other so we can never come together.
Well, see,
and then
let me say this,
and then, okay, and then I'll let you talk. I'm gonna get off in a few minutes, and I got two little things. And then on top of that, I'm back. Look what the white man did. They said America was their land. They a lie. America wasn't their land. This was the Indians' land. Look what they did. They came and killed the Indians, then put them in camps. And then once they put them in camp, then they gave them blankets. Then they filled the blankets up with smallpox. They always the biggest crooks.
Careful, Moses.
And then they try to say that the black man is so violent. Who did we learn the violence from? We learned it from you. We learned it from the best. And the black man have so, people may not believe this. People have so much built up in them from, I have got, let me give you a perfect example of how you can get stuff built up in you. When I see those videos of those policemen throwing those black boys down on the ground and stopping them for no reason, angry and hatred builds up. It builds up, it builds up, and it builds up. And let me tell you something. Black folks is built up with so much angry and hatred. They are a ticking time bomb waiting to explode. And that's what you see in a lot of the communities. It have been, even though we may be exploding in our community, but we have been pinned up and beat up so long that people are exploding. But now they begin to explode the other way. People are tired. And then now let me go into my other little question. I mean, my little comment. I heard what they were saying about the light skin and the dark skin. We was taught from history by the white man that our skin was no good. Our skin wasn't pretty. And then a lot of the stupid black men, excuse my French, and I can say this because I got a lot of high yellow sisters. My family is very high yellow. But let me tell you, we don't get caught up in that high yellow. That don't mean nothing. Let me tell you one thing. We better learn to love each other. And a lot of this, it's been bred and taught that they blue eyes and blonde hair. Just like they doing Serena Williams. Serena Williams, they said, I won more tournaments and just about next to I forgot the other lady she's running up to. But then they're going to, this white girl, they asked Serena, why are you not getting all these endorsements? And the white girl ain't hardly won no matches. But Serena gave them one question, gave them two answers. If I had blue eyes and blonde hair, that's all she said. Well, we know what it is. Then my grandson, I have a grandson, that his mother had two kids for my son. Then she goes and get a little baby by a white boy. And the baby by the white boy, my little grandson, he's 7. We was riding in the car the other day, and he tells me, Grandmama, I want to be mixed. Out of the blue. I said, what? I said, I make sure I heard him. I asked him again. I said, what did you say? He said, I want to be mixed. And I said, where did you get that? I said, what you mean you want to be mixed? He said, I want to be black and white. See, people get so caught up in that light skin and light hair and this and that. It just kills me. Black men is so gullible.
I'm
gonna be through, Brother Brown. You don't want a black woman, but you'll go get a 300-pound pregnant white woman and blow her beach right out of a bottle. Come on now. Come on. Don't get me started.
Let me say this about the little boy who said he wants to be mixed. Our children have been lied to when it comes to this word called multiculturalism. And I guess for the last maybe 45 years, when integration in the schools came to be prominent.
The phone breaking up, Brother Brown.
Can you hear me now?
It's breaking up.
Hey, Brother Brown, let's play this clip and let's try to get the phone lines clear because they may be kind of acting up just a tad bit. Hey, Scotty, do you have that Farrakhan clip?
Yes.
Delta, bring us into this clip.
I can't hear you. You breaking up, Ashir. I can't hear you.
I think
your phone, Delta.
It's like a robot. I can't hear you. You're like a robot.
Yeah, I think.
She
might need to hang up and call back in. That's what fixed it for me. But everybody sounds fine to me.
Yeah, everybody sounds fine to me.
Can y'all hear me?
Yes.
Yeah. Hey, brother. Okay, Scotty, go ahead on and clip it, and I'll hang up and call back in.
No, not you. I'm saying whoever's saying that they're having issues. If you can hear all
that.
Delta something like she said her line was acting up.
Yeah, so whoever
it is. Everybody sounds clear.
Yeah, so.
I'm going to hang up and dial back in.
Okay.
Okay. I'm good.
All right, want me to go into this clip?
Oh, yeah.
I guess, hold up. I think she must have hung up and is going to call back. Sister Black Rose, let me go ahead and cue this.
Come on. Can you hear me, Scotty?
Oh, okay. I do now. All right. You want me to go ahead and play the clip?
I'm here. Yes, please.
All right.
And this is a clip on Farrakhan. Speaking about a visit from Robert Kennedy Jr.
Was at my
Robert
home.
Robert Kennedy Jr., thank you.
A week or so ago. And Bobby Kennedy Jr. was representing a man in the Center for Disease Control who blew the whistle that the CDC was responsible for developing a vaccine that is genetically prepared or concocted to affect black males. This is the Bible, kill the male, spare the female. And it's going on right now. They'll take your baby. They're sneaking in the ward where the baby is born if the parents are not looking to take the baby and inject them. With what? What are they injecting them with? According to Bobby Kennedy and the research, and scientists, they're injecting them with vaccines that are high in mercury. And this mercury starts eating at the cells of the brain. They realize their world is finished. There's no more white supremacy ruling. That's over. We are awakening now. You're going to have to compete with awakened black men and women, awakened brown men and women, awakened red men and women, and awakened poor white people. You're not going to play the game over the masses of the people anymore. And that's why Zbigniew Brzezinski said, it is easier to kill a million people than to control a million people. They've lost control, but they're killing through food, vaccines. I'm not saying you shouldn't take a vaccine, but you shouldn't be stupid and think that the same man that gave the Indians smallpox through blankets, that same man has your interests at heart when he says we have a vaccine for you. You better wake up and look up. So I'm saying that because Bobby Kennedy can't get support because the pharmaceuticals have bought off Congress. Did you hear me? He can't get a congressman, a senator, to bring him before Congress and subpoena the whistleblower from CDC because the pharmaceuticals have bought off the Congress. I said, Mr. Kennedy, how formidable are your opposers? He had a chemist there. He had a billionaire there who's a philanthropist. And the billionaire looked at me and said, it's very difficult. I mean, why CNN? He said, I could get on CNN tonight. He was on Bill Maher's show. But he said, they won't allow me to say this. Say, you can say anything else because the pharmaceuticals have bought off the media.
Wow.
I said, well, what about black preachers? Since it's directed against black males, what are we doing? He said, I'm sorry. They're not responding either. Some of us have been paid off by the pharmaceutical companies. I said, well, what about the Congressional Black Caucus? He said, I'm sure they would like to help, but they're weak. So that's why he showed up at my door. Am I the only man that don't fear death to speak truth to power? Don't I have strong brothers and sisters out there that will stand with me? I'm prepared to go alone. Because if God is with me, I'm still the winner. It's just me and God.
Mm.
But it's a shame that we are so corrupt, so in love with money, that we will sell out the future of our people for a dollar bill. Well, what are you going to do when the dollar crashes? That's on the way. So all of you who betray each other for a dollar, who kill each other for a dollar, who are bought off by a dollar, well, you're going to have to find another medium of exchange because the dollar in a little while won't be worth a dime.
Not a dime.
All right. And that was Brother Farrakhan. Delta.
Yes.
Delta.
I'm here. Can you hear me?
You want to talk about the... Yes. Mm-hmm. I can hear you. Thankfully. Delta, you want to talk about the Farrakhan video?
Yeah, because you know what? I was on Facebook, and I saw that somebody had posted last night, and that just really startled me. That... Now, I can understand the white media not doing it. But the black preachers who won't look out for their people and won't tell their people what's going on, no, they don't want that. They want some fried chicken, collard greens, and oxtails, and watermelon, pecan pie, and pound cake.
Oh, yes.
And that's all they want. And some chili.
And lemon.
And much money now. Much money.
And plenty of money. But you can't go and tell your people what's going on. The man, Bobby Kennedy Jr., is coming to warn us. Robert Kennedy is coming to warn us. Taking it upon himself to warn the black community what they are doing to your people. What they, the trap that they got set for your preachers, for your people, and you can't even stand before your congregation and let people know what's going on. We got some sorry preachers today. The black preacher is all about, give me my Cadillac, let me ride, give me my Lincoln and
Cadillac.
Let me ride, and
honey,
give
please.
Me my...
What preacher's riding Cadillacs, honey? They have Bentleys and helicopters and
Cadillacs.
Yeah. I
got a
Cadillac. What preacher you talking about there?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, finally, I was talking. I heard you very clearly, but you couldn't hear me, so I had to go.
You sure couldn't.
But I was there. Well, but I'm going to say there's plenty of other preachers out there, too, that are doing some things that they're dying for.
But are they telling the people what's going on?
Yes. And I'm going to keep saying this because there's a level of them. They are doing these things, and they're dying, but they're being killed, and it's being hushed down.
Yeah.
And so here again, we gotta kind of think about those things too when we say that we put these people all in one basket. And there's
now,
no.
Now, what was the name of the one that just was killed, Mother Hattie? Well, they say he shot himself.
Bishop Davis.
What was his name? Nelson?
No telling what
Davis.
Bishop Davis.
Mm-hmm.
That man. Yeah. I just feel like this is what happened to him. I know that's what happened because he was out there on that police stuff. And then chances are, see, they'll tell the public anything, and they'll make the women say and do anything. Just like our president, I think he's in a pickle too. This place is so corrupt.
But he put himself in that pickle jar.
maybe not. I'm not so judgmental of people, and things aren't always the way they seem to be. But oftentimes, if you get it, and then I wanted to go back just with the young man was saying, we can fantasize and love on all we want to, but the fact of the matter is there were some. There was tribal fighting, and there was. Is it better?
Oh, your line keeps going in and out. Is it just me or?
It's not her line going out. I'm hearing keys, like somebody pressing keys on the phone pad. That's what I'm hearing.
You're hearing somebody on the phone pad?
Seemed like it just stopped when you said that.
Yeah.
That sounds a little better. Let's see. Keep going, Mother Hattie.
Okay, so what I want to say is there were tribal fighting in Africa, and yeah, there were captured people imprisoned by other tribes, Brother Brown. That's
no,
part of the history. I don't know what percentage it was.
The fact of the matter is you can have your
viewpoint on it. I've been to Africa too. I've seen the history even in Africa from the Africans and from Americans, and that's the summation that I have come to. And you know what? It may be wrong, but the fact of the matter is it's just like today. What Minister Farrakhan just said was this. Basically, we had sellouts then, and we've got sellouts now. And that's just part of the history. It's not been perfect there.
Nothing is perfect. But let me
from what I know about slavery in Africa, they did not practice chattel slavery. It was totally different from what these Europeans is practicing. They were not raping and abusing and using your babies as alligator bait and all kind of manner of evil that we know that they have done to people. Yes, there were tribal wars. There's always going to be a fight for resources. Here, the Native Americans did the same thing, but they wasn't practicing genocide against one another. And in Africa, from what I've read, that yes, they would capture people from other tribes, but like Brother Brown was saying, they were basically adopted into that tribe, and they were not treated like animals, like the white man treated people.
Their concept of slavery was totally different from the Europeans' concept. Totally. They did not stomp babies out of women's belly.
It wasn't slavery.
I'm not gonna
listen to everybody. At least let me make my statement. When we had tribal differences and one tribe may have overconquered the other tribe, they incorporated those tribes together for unification. They were allowed to intermarry. They were allowed to work. They were never put in a position of dehumanization.
Right.
Nobody has dehumanized us more than Europeans. Nobody has dehumanized us more than Europeans giving us a false religion. A religion that nobody that goes to church. How far can you trace Christianity? Let's get real tonight. How far can anybody trace Christianity? You cannot trace Christianity beyond the Nicene Council. And the average Christian that goes to church does not even know anything about the Nicene Council, the Council of Bishops, Ptolemy, any of these things that had a reference of putting forth a false image of a religious God or political concept.
I know about it, Brother Brown. They the ones that decided what books would be in that Bible.
Right.
Exactly. All of them were not allowed.
Right. But even the books that were put in the Bible, you have to understand, if it wasn't for them conquering the Coptic people and making the people who knew the truth about the African mother, child, and man, woman, and child worship, the Coptics, they forced him into helping to orchestrate what was known as the first Bible. The religious concepts that that took place after they formulated the Coptic into accepted religion and Christendom in Turkey. That's when they started putting together this Nicene Council, the Council of Bishops. Now, what they were doing at that point in time, there was no mention of a Christ. We need to read our history. We need to read the history of the church from a different perspective. Dr. Ben had a book about the Bible, all of the Bibles that had been written. How do we come up with the thing that the King James Bible is authentic? See, we as African people need to get real and understand where did it come from. See, the same thing about Islam. Where did it come from? The European is diabolical. The Ashkenazi Jew. Where did Judaism come from? People, they have trained our minds to not even understand that they made Judaism in the minds of black people who sit up in these Christian churches, that Judaism was the beginning with Moses and Isaac and Jacob. That is false. There's no truth to none of it. The 13th tribe was the people that came from Caesarea who formulated the Jewish system that we know today. They were nomadic people that came from on the other side of the Black Sea. Okay? And they infiltrated the slums of Europe for over 300 or 400 years until they came in a position of power. Political power. And they helped formulate the first slave trade. As a matter of fact, the Arabs taught the Europeans how to enslave us because they were our first enslavers. They were the ones who decided in the Sudan that they would kill our women and children and put them on ships and take them across the desert to be used as chattel. Then the European adopted that concept in the 14th century because of the fact that the Moors, they said that the Moors, the occupation of the Mediterranean by the Moors and the miscegenation of the Moors with European people, they had to get this back. Therefore, the Portuguese, through Bishop Bartolomeu de las Casas, organized and sanction slavery against African people by Europeans. But once again, these same people that say, assalamu alaikum, these were the people that brought slavery to Africa first, chattel slavery. Not indentured servitude of two tribes merging together and one tribe overpowered the other and said, guess what, buddy, I won this fight, let's join forces together. That's what Dr. Clark talked about. But when you look at the religious concepts for political power, nobody has been more diabolical in training our minds to falsehoods than Europeans in religion. And if we look at where the King James Bible came from, if we look at the aspects of the King James, here's a man that killed his own mother, had his mother killed on the request of his aunt so that he could unify Great Britain. We need to read this. We need to read the real history of these political concepts that we associate today with religion. There is no spirituality in Christianity, Islam, or Judaism. And how can it...
Well, Brother Brown, let me say one more thing. Go ahead on and finish that, and let's take a break. Okay.
Let me say one thing. How can somebody explain to me how one man who was so-called Abraham, who never existed, could be the father of Judaism, Christianity, and Islam? Now we can take a break.
Say the black of the best, the sweet of the juice. I say the dark of the blessing, the deep of the roots. I give my heart to my sister's old welfare. If don't nobody
never let up. Forget, but don't forget, girl, keep your head up. And when he tells you you ain't nothing, don't forget.
You are tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For live programming schedules, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
Well, I don't make my work for you to interpret it. I make it for Black young people so that they can understand that we are at war, that we have to be strong-minded, that we have to be productive, that we have to be unafraid of expressing ourselves and getting what we want in this society.
But isn't there a danger in telling young people, encouraging them to be militant? Aren't you taking them down a track that can only lead to a cul-de-sac and at the same time alienating a lot of people who really don't understand or accept or even grasp that militant language?
Well, what most people who know my work know is that I don't only teach young Blacks to be militant. I teach them to be intelligent, substantive, to make analysis. I think that America has to stop painting young Black people as being uncivilized and irrational, which is what they've done in the coverage of this story in Los Angeles. I think that we have to look at the fact that Black people didn't just run outside and burn out their houses because they were angry. The Beverly Center was wrecked, and that's in a white area. Korean businesses were targeted because that Korean woman shot and killed Latasha Harlins. And she was convicted of the crime, and she did not one day in jail. And we got 25% of our Black male population behind bars doing exorbitant sentences for small crimes, and we don't get justice. These are the reasons why people were attacked.
Describe, as you see it, the gap between those young people and the rest of society.
The gap between young people and the rest of society is that young people don't have hope. Jesse Jackson says, keep hope alive. But there is no hope because they look at the leadership, number one, and they say, okay, to get along in American society, you have to be a sellout. You have to be put on a suit, talk like a white man, ask for what white people want, say what white people like to be successful. And young Black people don't see that as something that they want to strive for. We want to be able to be who we are, talk how we talk, walk how we walk, live how we want to live, and be producers and providers for our children in the future. We want to be African.
Didn't you want to go into politics once? You went to Washington and worked, didn't you?
I went to Washington and worked, but once I found out that there was no work going on in Washington, I decided that I didn't want to be part of that scenario.
What did you see? What do you mean no work going on?
What I saw was a lot of fake people. A lot of phony people. There are ways that I could intellectualize it, but I wouldn't even do that because I'm not trying to show you my skills. I'm trying to tell you the truth.
Well, I know from reading about you and from the young people on my staff, you have skills other than music, if we've just seen. But what do you think about this, Robert Woodson?
Well, I wish the issue were as simple as the young lady is putting it. When I asked myself then if power is what we were striving for, and that was the call in the 60s, why is it in my city of Washington, D.C., we have been in control of the courts, we have been in control of the city hall, the school board, zoning commissions, and yet poor Blacks in that city are no better off when they were controlled by whites. The same is true in Los Angeles, the same is true of Atlanta. The issue is, and so that we are failing our own people in some cases, and so it's really in some cases, as I see it, it is the rules of the game that have to be changed, not just the sex of the ruler. Because if you take over a government structure that is not fair to poor people, that emphasizes downtown development, where 80% of all the development dollars that flows into these cities develops downtown, none in the neighborhoods. Yet the neighborhoods and the violence there is used as a rationale for getting urban action grants in the 60s and 70s. When that money comes, it does not go in the neighborhoods. And some Black officials who are in control of it make sure that their friends are taken care of. And so that it doesn't matter then who controls it if what they do is corrupt.
The thing that we have to be clear about is the definition of power. I don't consider Mayor Dinkins to be powerful. I didn't consider Marion Barry to be powerful. I don't even consider the Black woman who's there to be powerful. Tom Bradley, the guy in Los Angeles, I consider him to be pitiful, not powerful.
Who is powerful?
Powerful is when you can deliver resources, services and substances to your people and not compromise. The only black people who can become mayors of these cities are people who compromise with the white power system and deliver the resources to other places other than our community in Los Angeles. And I think the reason why we wouldn't be sitting here if they would have delivered the right verdict is because white people wouldn't have been hurt, white property wouldn't have been damaged, and America wouldn't have lost to the tune of $500 million. In terms of solutions, however, for young people, I see it as black people having to put pressure on the system, continued and consistent pressure. That we need I'm going to tell you what for. What we need to do is get our experts together, make an economic assessment of our relationship to America, our contributions to corporate activity, and divest from America as a white racist institution. Black youth, we spend a lot of money on sneakers. We spend a lot of money on gear. We spend a lot of money on jewelry. And we're going to have to be unified. For the first time in Los Angeles, we saw unity between the Bloods and the Crips. We need that.
Yes,
we need black
unity. But Sister Soldier, these two gangs out there were unified in looting the community. They temporarily abandoned their own enmity between each other and helped to ransack their own community.
That doesn't mean that I give up hope on their ability to become politically conscious. I think that black youth have been neglected, and they've also been looted, which is why...
All right, that was Sister Soulja.
Love her. I love her. I love her. Yes, we have been looted. We get looted every single day. Every single day we get looted.
You know, I have a question. You know, a song that posed me. And, you know, I sit in a lot of political meetings in city government. One question that I have economically, how is it that during the Reagan administration, when he lifted the ban on immigration, which I never hear anybody black talk about, when Ronald Reagan lifted the ban on immigration and allowed all these people to come in from the Middle East, and they now all of them, basically, not just own hotels with the Hindus, but the majority of the gas stations that pump gas and sell lottery tickets and cigarettes and alcohol are owned by Arabs. I remember the day that in the black community, we always had a gas station, a major gas station, that was owned by a black man who fixed our cars, they sold gas, they did all of that. Okay, that has been eradicated. Now, I'm not saying that these people fix cars or whatever, but there is a monopoly that came in after this immigration influx with Ronald Reagan that just destroyed this economic base in the black community. This was an
That was the whole point. Anytime some new rule or policy is made that affects us, that was the intent. You know, it's not a puzzle if that was the intent to destroy the communities.
My point the majority of our so-called leaders, I said so-called because that's what they are. They're so-called because they are called by white people to be our leader. They're not my leader. But my point is that nobody has addressed this. Nobody has stated in none of their so-called public speech, why is it that we don't have these economic resources? We have had, we talk about this House Negro in the White House. He has been there for 8 years. Okay. Our economics have not grown 2%. Not 2%. Everybody else's economic has grown 50%. So,
I don't mean to interrupt you, Brother Brown. I'll let him finish. Go ahead, Brother Brown. Finish your sentence that you were saying.
We have to understand the initiative that Marcus Garvey set for in order for us to come out of this dilemma. The initiatives of self-help economics, will allow us to do a whole lot of things that we individually can accomplish. And until we get back to our roots in reference to spirituality and leave these other religions alone, we have no, we do not need to continue to try to incorporate anybody's ideologies with Africa. We have tried that for 2,000 years. And it's not working.
Brother John, I think Aja was trying to ask you a question. Were you trying to say something,
okay,
Sarah,
okay.
Aja?
No, that was
I'm
Sarah.
Not sure if she was asking.
No. What I was about to say is that this economic situation that Brother Brown is speaking on, with the immigrant community, that these recent immigrants that are coming over here, because we started off In the 50s and the 60s with the Koreans. You had the Koreans,
right.
And you had the Indians that came in from Pakistan, India, and that part of the
right.
world. And then in the mid-70s or whatever, we started having the Vietnamese that start coming in after that destabilization process. They came in there by the boatload. And then after
right.
those Vietnamese came in, then, of course, we started having with the various people from the so-called Middle East, because wherever the United States go and they start their wars and destroy the community in those areas, they end up having to bring those people in as an insult to take over. That is why Detroit has been taken over by the Syrians and the Lebanese. They pretty much have Detroit on lockdown. That whole area it's on lockdown with that particular ethnic group. And then in the mid-90s or whatever, we had the skirmishes that happened in Bosnia, Herzegovina, where
mm-hmm.
those bunch of white Muslims, they end up coming over here. And that was another group. And then we were about to see another influx is going to be coming in from the Syrians, from Afghanistan, from
mm-hmm.
Iraq. They all are going to be flooded over here because the Europeans are going
right.
to put pressures on the Americans and saying, okay, y'all started it, which they did. And y'all created this mess. They're flooding us over
right.
here. Y'all are going to have to take some of this. This 4,000 or 5,000 that you said you're going to take, you're not going to take it. And every time they do that, the black people get pushed further and further because the little bit that we have is snatched away from us and
that's
it's
right.
given to this new immigrant group, just like it did with the so-called Latinos that came south of the border. They end up
right.
getting plopped down into our community. And the limited resources that we had, we end up training it with them. All of these language courses, these second language courses and all this other stuff, it was taken away from our after school program for our children. Now it was diverted to help an immigrant community learn to speak English and to navigate themselves and to get around because you had the Somalians. Because when I left Atlanta to move out here, we had a whole influx of East Africans from Somalia, Eritrea, Ethiopia, Kenya. They all flooded the Atlanta area. And it's trained the resources because you have to take those resources from the black community and to help these immigrant communities. So bit by bit, that is why, like Brother Brown was saying, this multiculturalism, this people of color situation, we've got to stop it because black people are the ones, we are stopping what progress we have started to reach back and help another group of people, pull them up, and then next thing you know, they end up getting way ahead of us. Are we
right
yeah.
starting
all over again?
Hey, can I interject?
You make a really good point.
Let me interject
well,
on
Scotty.
Another.
Scotty.
Yeah.
That was Scotty. I think Scotty was trying to jump in and say something. Scotty.
Yeah, another way that they're stealing our resources is through 21st century slavery and human trafficking because, like, the 80% white community that I live in that ain't hurting for no resources, well, we got a big old prison full of black people from other areas that's predominantly black. That's just one way. But I was having a conversation with my mother, going back to the piece Brother Brown was speaking on economics. I was having a conversation with my mother today, and I was talking about black churches and the billions of dollars that they take in from their congregations every year, that they then take that money and go stick it in these white people's banks okay, that won't give us loans and things. Now, there are a group of churches in Charlotte, North Carolina. They don't get a whole lot of attention or media press, but I think it's about 3 or 4 churches that came together to create a credit union so that they can provide loans, business loans, personal loans, and stuff to their members. And that is what the black churches, for all the billions that they are taking in every year, they are not reinvesting back into these communities. They are not practicing cooperative economics. And so, you know,
not at all. And so
we got resources, you know, right in our community, but it's we're giving it to religious institutions that don't got our best interests at heart. All right. So I don't mean to be bagging on black churches, but the truth is the truth. They taking billions, billions every year. We shouldn't be having to go to no white bank to ask for no loans. We, these black churches should be creating credit unions in our own banks.
Because the money's there. The money is flowing.
And grocery, and our own grocery stores, that's something that my dad talked about recently when I was speaking with him. He said that he met with some of the preachers in the community and said, all of these empty, large buildings, some of them were grocery stores, once were in this neighborhood. The black churches, all of those black churches and all those wealthy, kind of affluent black people in the neighborhood could come together and reopen up some of those grocery stores.
And not just the church.
Like little vegetable stores.
But the mosque, too. The mosque, too.
And the mosque, too. You might, Scotty, yep. And the mosque. And
yeah,
Brother Brown, we were talking about that the other day. Remember, I said in Memphis, and not to come down on one particular mosque, but that mosque right there on Vance in Memphis has been there for years. And Oz, you know what
years.
I'm talking about. And the community looked the same way it looked.
It looks the
20
same.
Years ago. And it's a stone throws away from the FedEx center that was built there. But then just 3 streets over, it's still the projects, it's still pimping, prostitution, gambling, shooting, and everything else.
Street-walking,
you know, except for where they've carved out little sections and built new communities for some professors at the colleges nearby and the doctoral students at UT Tennessee or whatever and all of that stuff. But other than that, you know, it's still just, it looks the same way. Liquor store still that has been there forever since I can remember.
Yeah.
You know, right down the street from the mosque. So, you know, I agree with you on that too, Scotty. The mosque needs to jump in.
Yeah.
As an abolitionist,
you know, myself, Max Johannine, and others who, you know, this is our mission, is to end slavery in this country. You know, slavery never ended. Read the 13th Amendment. But we have reached out to churches and asked them to let us come speak to their congregation about 21st century slavery and human trafficking. We have asked these black churches to stop putting their money in banks like Bank of America, what's the other one? Wells Fargo, who then turns around and invests that money in private prison industry. And you want to keep putting your money into, you're giving the money to the enemy to use against us. It's, the nonsense got to stop.
Yeah. I agree with what Scotty is saying, because if you're looking at, like we have all of these black farmers that have these small farms. And these churches, they meet at least about 2 to 3 times a week. You mean to tell me that you can't have these farmers to bring their fresh produce to the church and y'all set up a farmer's market outside?
Right.
And you just selling it to the community? That is, this is basic things that we can do. We got, they have all of this empty parking spots out that sits up there. They don't want to do anything. They're not, as I said, not mean to bang on the church, but I can say from living here in Dallas, and we have 2 big mega churches. We have T.D. Jakes Church and Dr. Freddie Haynes, Friendship West. I don't see them running any farmers markets or doing anything with the produce. And they got some of the most overweight, obese children and people, adults walking around here. So you could be having some kind of program where you can teach them to make nutritious food. Those who want to transition to become vegetarian or run yoga class, Pilates, whatever, exercise program, do something constructive rather than sitting up there reading from a dead book.
When you are controlled by a religious institution, I say that? Because a lot of people that come up with these churches, especially these World of Faith churches, because that's the biggest client game going. And I'm speaking because I was an ex-nurse. The World of Faith movement was nothing but a money-making move. Okay? It used elements to try to tell people that they can have what they want. You know, if you say it, you can have it. And it was just like, it was one of the biggest client games because guess what? The people fell for it and the preachers were telling them, you know, the more you give, the more you're going to receive. But I'm giving all my money to you. You know, and I've heard ministers say, if you give me your paycheck, God will increase it by 100%. And I have seen people actually fall for that. Well, you know, I don't tithe. I tithe to my community. And there are various elements within the Bible that if you don't study, if you don't know, the tithe was only for one person in the Bible. The tithe was for the Levites. Why? Because according to the scriptures in the Bible, the Levites were the ones that took care of the so-called holy of the holy, and they did not have an inheritance. So, according to the Bible, they were supposed to, the other 11 tribes were supposed to donate a tenth of what they had for their survival. That's where the tithe came from.
And when the priesthood was ended and again, I'm just speaking on biblical teachings, but when the priesthood was ended with the coming of Christ, tithing was over with. Because now you ain't got to go to a priest. I'm going off the teachings of the Bible now. Now you ain't got to go to the priest and offer no animal sacrifice that only the priest could do for you and all it. Now, according to the Bible, you can approach the throne of God through Jesus Christ yourself, and you don't need no go-between, you know. So that's what the tithe was for the priesthood. With the priesthood gone, then what you still playing tithes for?
That's right. And the other thing was that they still use that scripture in the book of Malachi. I'll never forget it. Malachi 3:8-10. I have taught so many people on that one scripture. You know, if a man robbed God, yet ye have robbed me, how have ye robbed me and tithed an offer? That's how they get the people minds bound up to give exorbitant amounts of money, because the first thing that they do is manipulate your mind into a spirit of conviction. It's all a game, people. I've been there and I've done that. What we have to understand, it's almost like extortion. But, you know, they're manipulating your mind. Our minds have been manipulated from day one when they gave us this institution called religion. And I often tell the younger generation that I deal with, you have to understand that when they stole the people from Africa, and I say stole because that's what they did. I don't care what people say. When they stole us from Africa, they had a concept of only taking the younger people. You know why? It was easy to beat them into submission and retrain their minds. That's why they stole the youth out of Africa. If they were
supposed to get more service out of them, the old folks,
right.
They
got more service out of them because they were young. They could work them. And something else we talked about on the program, we didn't understand that we have never been taught that when they brought us here, we were the largest commodity. When the Wall Street was created, the first president, the last first president, George Washington, when he took his inauguration, he was a slave trader. He was a slave trader. He had slaves, and that was the biggest commodity in this country next to tobacco and cotton. And they knew, based on the capitalistic system, that we had nobody to help us produce the goods and services that we wanted to pay. And
we have
fell into the trap of thinking that we do not need Booker T. Washington gave us a blueprint. When he came up with Tuskegee Institute, he said, you know what? We're coming from slavery where we didn't know anything. let's go to a service-oriented industry. If we can't sell the services to white folks to pay us for, we can damn sure sell them to ourselves. That's what promulgated us from that point up until the 60s. We, every community had service orientation in it within itself. That's how we survived. When this thing called integration, I call it the integration trap. You understand me? Because that's what it was. Integrate means to bring together and everybody would profit from it. We never profited nothing from integration. Nothing. Nothing, absolutely nothing. Because number one, it destroyed every business that we had in our own community. We were so adamant about going to sit at his lunch counter, eating his ham sandwich, drinking a Coke at Woolworth, that we didn't see the bigger picture. The bigger picture was, if I'm going to take all my money to the white man, then I ain't going to take nothing to the colored man or the brother man. So the more we ate at Woolworth, the less we ate at the Greasy Spoon. So eventually the Greasy Spoon had to close up. It was all a trap. It was a mental trap.
Yep.
The more I go down there to the department store in the downtown area, I don't have to worry about the little black man selling clothes out of his car. You know why? Because he's selling bootleg clothes. Okay? He's selling knockoff. Well, hell, half of the stuff in Hatcher and Mason is knockoff. We just don't know it.
Slave labor that they end up making those clothes. It's not only that, but like what you were saying, Brother Brown, earlier with the slave trading over George Washington, a book that a lot of y'all might want to get and read is called Ebony and Ivy, and it's by Stephen Craig Wilder, and this book details the history of the building of the so-called Ivy League institutions in this country. And George Washington's stepson, because in that book, when he showed up to go to Columbia College in New York, he showed up with a slave. George Washington's stepson, his wife Martha, because George Washington never had any children with Martha. All the Washingtons, the George made, they all were made in the slave quarters with black women. He made none with Martha. He raised her previous marriage is the one he raised. And those white children, they said when they showed up for college, they showed up with his two slaves. His stepson showed up with two slaves.
And another good book to read that will shed light.
I have to remember that one.
And another good book to shed light on how the economics of slavery was promulgated to be the financial institution of this country was a book written by Eric Genovese called The Economics of Southern Slavery. And in that book, he gives a very, very detailed...
Uh-oh, I think we lost Brother Brown.
I'm here.
Oh, okay.
Somebody's phone is
off. If everybody, hey, everybody be quiet for a second, I can identify where that's coming from. Okay.
All right. Thank you, Brother Scott.
Well, you know what? We're down our last 2 minutes, Brother Brown. You want to go ahead on and close us out?
Did we want to do the reading?
Yes, Mother Hattie. I was hoping you were still available to read that. Can you read it, Mother Hattie? And
real
then Mother Brown can close us on out.
Okay. This is a working statement from Women United regarding the attacks on black women such as Rakia Boyd, Ayanna Stanley Jones, Sandra Bland, and many others. Women United denounce and detest the vicious attacks on black women that we have historically been plagued with, and it seems to have escalated in more recent times. We are 100% human beings and deserve to be protected and with equal justice under the law and other entities. The recent vicious behavior and disrespect of the lives of black women must stop. These are unconscionable, deplorable acts and actions occurring in a country that considers itself to be civil and democratic.
A plan of action must be adopted and implemented immediately to stop the terror on Black women. Women United is placing a call to action for all women groups, organizations, and men to rectify these crimes against the humanity of Black women. To make your statement and act to protect the humanity of our sisters, contact Women United at women.united7777@gmail.com.
Thank you so much, Mother Hattie. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And please contact Women United, Mother Hattie. We have a new fundraiser going on, too, for Women United, so we'll be talking more about that at the end of the week. Brother Brown, you want to close us out? Thank you, callers, listeners, everyone. Of course, Aja, Sarah, Delta, Mother Hattie, Brother Brown, you know you always bring. And thank you, Scotty, for chiming in. Brother Brown, close us out, please.
Namaste.
Oh, Brother Brown dipped out on us. Well, I'll close us out. Peace and good night. Peace and soul.